Hello, and welcome to the Modern Maker Podcast for Thursday, September 17th, 2020, otherwise known as National Apple Dumpling Day. I told you guys it was a bad one. This is the second time that we're starting this, and I did this whole little jag about what a bad day it was, and I didn't say it, and now you guys know why.
Yeah, I see why. It was very unimpressive.
Yeah, I didn't think I know what an apple dumpling is. I mean, I can imagine.
It's sort of the unsung hero of all the apple desserts, right? You've got apple pie, apple cobbler, you have apple fritter. Yeah, strudels, fritters, all things.
Yeah, but I think dumplings are, like, they're the pocket holes of, like, pastry or baked goods, right? Like, isn't it just, like, a clump of flour and, like, dough in, like,
sounds
kind of
like
a
it.
Stew?
Yeah, like, I mean, I'm
dumpling
sure
is
good.
A pretty nondescript, like, at least, like, Western dumplings, like,
yeah,
American
dumplings. You got your chicken
dumplings.
And dumplings, which is basically just, like, a dense biscuit in
right, like a dough
gravy
ball.
Or something.
Yeah, I always thought dumplings straddled the line between dessert and dinner, like real food. I thought you put meat in dumplings and then you put fruit and things like that into pie.
I mean, but I gotta believe that an apple dumpling is on the dessert side of the fence.
I know, and I'm just saying its whole world's shattered for me at this moment. You know,
well,
I thought I understood things and now I don't.
Apple cobbler and apple dumplings are kind of considered the same thing.
Maybe.
It probably is.
Because I think it's both something where there's like this big mass of like kind of stewed fruit. And then there's some sort of crumbly or breading on top.
Well, I'll
say
that I love a
cobbler. It's more of a layer of the breading on top. Whereas with the dumpling, it's more clumps amongst the stewed apples.
I like it.
There we go.
Man, who would have thought that we could have filled up, I don't even know how much, 2 minutes and 20 seconds on apple dumplings.
You're
but
welcome,
we did it.
America.
Congrats,
that's
guys.
That's too, Chris. You almost didn't even bring it up. Come
I
on.
Know, thank God.
All right, what are you guys working on?
Yeah, what have you been up to, Mike?
Mike, you're making a mess with the epoxy.
Yeah, I guess I could share some things that I've learned this week, because that's what this week has been, is a learning experience.
Make better
but it's been,
molds.
It's been fun, yes. Lesson one, do as much prep work as humanly possible on your mold when you're making epoxy projects. I've been spending the majority of this week working on that vanity that I've been kind of working on the back burner for the past month and a half. It's that vanity that's going in the school bus bathroom. And me and Ben took it out of the mold a couple of weeks ago, and I was wrapping up the living room for a little while, and now I just got back around to it. And I might as well have just started with a gigantic chunk of epoxy. I shouldn't have even tried to mold it into anything other than just a block, because I've had to make a router sled to flatten basically all four sides. I've used that router sled to use a 3.5-inch long flush trim bit to actually make and plunge cut a sink bowl.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, and I've just been belt sanding and polishing the fire out of this.
The 3-inch isn't enough, though. You're going to have to go deeper than that.
That's what she said.
It's going to be some shallow hand washing. He'll just get a real high sink faucet.
Ben, there's no way you said that without just lobbing me up, and that's what she said.
Wow.
It was an alley-oop. Spike her down, Mike.
So the way I looked at it is a 3.5-inch deep sink basin
really
is pretty
RPM,
shallow.
Bro.
it's pretty shallow, but for a bathroom vanity, I think it's going to work out. The original form that I had, I carved out this negative out of foam, and I think it was about 6.5 inches deep, which most people would agree is a good depth for a sink base.
It's American average.
Exactly. That's the American average sink base. But for this bathroom project, I think going with this flat bottomed sink is going to look really cool. I'm kind of already losing some functionality, so if it's not as deep, I don't really care.
So you're gonna
it's
pour
more
a
about
new layer
salvaging
in?
This project. Yeah. Okay. So this is the part I should update you guys on. The big mystery with this project was whether the foam that I used for the negative for that sink bowl, whether it sprung a leak and just soaked up all of the epoxy, or whether there would be something to actually carve out. And it turned out about 1.5 inches of the wall of foam soaked up epoxy, but then that created enough of a barrier that the inside stayed hollow.
Hmm.
The unfortunate part about that is that 1.5-inch barrier is from the left and right direction, but it's also from the bottom. So the actual bottom of that sink bowl is encapsulated foam. So my new plan is I've carved out that bowl that's about 3.5 inches deep. Then I'm going to use the turbo plane to actually carve the meat of it, the middle, even deeper. That way I can backfill it with more blue epoxy so that I have a good clean flat bottom. And I'll just tilt that whole thing like 2 degrees. That way the water will run towards the drain eventually.
Have you thought about using that flex shaft like carver? that kind of like episode, it sort of looks like a Dremel tool, but it's on the flex shaft, like the Ryobi one we have. Because you could put a pretty aggressive carving bit on that too to remove it. Like you could put a spherical one that's about a 3/4 inch, like a carbide rough one.
Yeah.
I still think you should pour that second layer, but it might help you sort of hog out. Get it?
Yeah.
Yeah. This episode is so full of innuendo.
Innuendos.
Well, it's appropriate considering your Manscaped video that's about to drop.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's hush hush. But I've got Chris, I'll send it to you. I've got a funny Manscaped video for an ad read that I made.
I'm already digging it.
But instead of that rotary tool that you mentioned, I actually used the turbo plane on the angle grinder because I thought the same thing you did. I don't like using the router to begin with. And the last thing I wanted to do was route out that entire sink bowl using some kind of like double flute straight bit. And so I actually carved everything but the perimeter with the turbo plane, and that blade did pretty well. The foam really tried to chip and turn into little like sharp shards flying at me, but all in all it worked pretty well. So yeah, the turbo plane did great, and I'm going to use that to sort of overcarve everything to backfill eventually. But I might steal that little rotary tool though for fitting the sink drain. I know that might be a little finicky, so that would be good for like little precision work. That would work great.
Right.
Yeah, it seems like if you're just backfilling it with epoxy, you can go pretty much as messy as you want to hog out material, as you say.
All in all, though, this project is going to be a salvage. I know it's been on the fence for a long time, so I'm happy to report that I think I'm going to have a video coming out next week on building that big epoxy vanity. Man, it was a nightmare. It's still a nightmare. I've still got a full day of only sanding. That's all I'm doing tomorrow, but it'll still be fun. I'll throw on a couple of podcasts and make it as fun as I can.
Even with that sort of router sled, I mean, you must have been throwing epoxy shavings everywhere, but that was also probably pretty satisfying to see it plane it down real smooth.
It was. So I picked up a 2.5 inch diameter flattening bit.
It's almost basically like a thickness planer bit.
Yeah, exactly. It's what you would use in a CNC. It looks like a big Forstner bit, basically, but it's for a router. And it was really great. So I basically only took about an inch per pass because I didn't want to have it cutting on the tail side as well. But it did a really great job. So it made me really think, like flattening slabs or anything like that, if I took 2 days to make a nice router jig, I could really take on projects like that no problem. So it got me interested because I usually try and stay away from plunge routers or anything too beefy in the router department, but everything has gone really smooth. I've just done my best to read directions, make sure I'm always feeding the router in the right direction and never taking too much in one pass. And that kind of combination has made it, you know, it's not like I'm taking like the tiniest passes. I'm still taking significant cuts. So everything's moving quickly. I'm not really getting a bunch of snags or grabs, and overall I'm getting good results. So project is moving along good. And nice. If you want to stay up to date, follow me on Instagram at Modern Builds. What about you guys? What are y'all up to?
Ben? Chris, you go.
Okay, fine. I'll go. So, well, I don't know. So I kind of hinted at this a couple weeks ago that I'm working on. I just finished up what I've built for our next challenge. Which,
oh, yeah.
So it's going to be next week that it's going to officially kick off. So I don't know. Like, what do we want to say what it is right now, or should we just say that there's a challenge coming next week?
Yeah, what should we do? Well, you already put your video out.
No, it's going to come out on the 24th.
Oh.
So we're doing a desk challenge. Yeah,
sounds like Mike already spilled the beans.
You're right. I'm sorry, guys. I realized I just put my foot in my mouth. You guys go.
Let's just say this. It's going to be very open-ended. You know, everybody's building desks right now. There's a very much increased need for desks. So I happen to need two of them. I just built the one for the plans that had nothing to do with this. I ended up building two more that I'm going to do in my project. So I'm going to do like a very, very beginning DIY one and then a intermediate DIY desk. The rules are going to be like very loose. It's going to be make a desk. You can use wood, mixed materials, whatever you want to do, or some kind of workstation. Like, you know, I would guess that we're not going to see a lot of like the desks in the style, or I'm sure we'll see a lot that are like, you know, more in the normal style that what mine are. But I'm sure we'll see like a lot of out the box.
We want to see your gimmicks. We want to see your desk gimmicks.
Yes, look, desk gimmicks.
Like storage optimization, equipment integration, crazy material choices, and fun shapes. That's what we're looking
for. Right? Our first three challenges, two of them were on units of material, and the other one was on a broad idea about technique. With the way things are going, more people are working from home than literally ever before in probably the history of the world. I mean, except for farming times when everybody's home was their work.
When there was only working at home.
But in the history of sort of like modern office work, there's never been so many people working at home. And this is really challenging. I mean, it's not that different for me and Mike, but I mean, Chris, I imagine with your kids, it's at home now. It's changed the way you work when you are at home. I know when we would schedule things like the podcast stuff around, you kind of schedule them around when your kids are sleeping or not there.
Yep.
So working from home is taking on this whole new dynamic that everyone's suddenly rushing to kind of figure out. And we thought that desks are an interesting way to kind of show some inspiration when people are struggling with this situation. So when we say desk, it doesn't mean that it has to just be four legs and that. We really kind of broadly mean as we want to see your ideas for how you work at home or how you create a space in your domestic environment to be productive, to do something that's a little bit different than just living, a little bit different than sitting on a couch and watching TV. How do you get stuff done in your home? And how do you create an environment that helps you be more productive?
Totally.
Yeah. And it'll be cool because, like, you know, the Bentwood challenge ended up being this sort of like encyclopedia of bending wood. Like it just created such a big resource. So hopefully this is kind of the same where it's just this like, you know, between the 100 or 200 projects or however many things get submitted, there's going to be something that's for everybody, or at least something that like can be your jumping off point for anybody that discovers this, you know, from the time that it's done until for all of eternity.
That's it. So the general idea being, if we can create an encyclopedia for what you're saying, Chris, like an encyclopedia of how to bend wood for creative projects, or an encyclopedia of 2x4 or 2 sheets of plywood projects. We want an encyclopedia of the work from home solution. Yeah. So the cool part, especially with what you guys are talking about, is I think desks in anybody's house, whether you're messy or organized, that's the spot that's like uniquely you. Whether you're like a scatterbrained person that wants post-it notes everywhere, or you're somebody that's very A-type personality and everything is, you know, in a slot. Mm-hmm. Like the desk is, it's like a reflection of the person using it. So I think we're going to get extra unique submissions. If people are into music, you know, I could totally see a bunch of music production equipment. If people are into art or illustrating, same situation. So I think this is where, for a lot of the people that make content especially, a lot of people have used these challenges as a good launch pad to get some eyes on their projects and to also just come up with a project that might be a little more out of the box than what people typically make for content. And this, I think, especially is a good way for those people making content to introduce a little bit about yourself, a little bit of your own personality into the project, talk onto the camera, let people know why you made it the way you did, all of those special and unique features. And I think it'd just be a fun way of, you know, maybe getting people out of their shells in a design perspective, but also if they're making videos that way too, because you can really demonstrate why you made it the way you did.
Yeah. So here, I'll talk more in detail about one of the desks that I built, and I'll kind of give like the way that I approached it and what I ended up doing. So my situation is that now Dolores comes here to the shop in the office and works 2 days a week. And now that Seven's back in school, she brings Seven. So he does school from here 2 days a week. So I basically needed a place for both of them to be able to work. And, you know, hopefully this whole thing is temporary. Like, I mean, it will be temporary. It's just how long is it going to be temporary for? So my thinking was like, I want to build something that's useful for them for the next however long they need it. It doesn't like, you know, there's not a lot of compromising with it, but it's like the cheapest that it can be given that situation.
Right.
So there's kind of two ways that you can, and I also want it to be something that like anybody could very easily build.
So this is the DIY solution.
This is this very, very simple DIY solution. So like this part will probably only be like the first 3 minutes of the video because it's very simple. And then the next part will be a lot longer. But anyway, so thinking about it from like a cost perspective, right? So you can think of like, how much does something cost? Like the most obvious, not thinking deeply about it, is just like, how much did you pay for the stuff that you used it for? But like, I would say, well, it's that, but then also like, what's its usefulness after you're done using it for that? And so if you can back that off, then like maybe it's cheaper to spend a little bit more upfront, but get more usefulness out of that when it's not a desk anymore.
So it basically has a second life.
Right. So my situation is like, I always keep like 8 sheets of Baltic birch plywood around the shop because I use it all the time. So I got one sheet and I basically split it in half. So it's an 8-foot run by like a 26 inch run, 26 inches deep, 8 feet long, then cut 2 panels on either side. So the smallest panels that I even have left from this piece of plywood are like 26 inches wide and about like 28 inches tall. So they're still bigger than like most of the panels I use. And I didn't put any finish on it. So that means I'm gonna be able to use all of this wood again for some kind of carcass after it's not a desk anymore. Cause basically I'll just rip off the parts that I put screws through and it'll still be totally useful. Then for the center, I went and bought for like $129, just one of those like Husky tool chests that are, you know, like 18 inches wide, 20 inches wide that go on wheels or whatever.
Right.
And if you don't put the wheels on it, it's about like 28 inches tall and it has kind of like a little tray in the top of it naturally. So you could just cut like you could just put anything in there as a spacer. And I basically set it in the middle so that it's drawers that they can keep stuff in and use as a desk, and it's useful and it makes the whole thing like very sturdy. And then after I'm done with it, so like I said, the plywood will all be totally useful to me still. So that's basically costing me nothing. And then this $129 tool chest, like I can put it under my table saw and it'll be completely useful for me in the workshop. Or like, honestly, if I just decided, you know, I don't want this thing, I want to go sell it on Craigslist, I could probably still sell it for like $80.
I love it. So you're covered like in every regard, aside from the little strip you got to cut off that has screw holes in it. The part that's got screw holes in it, just little scrap.
Yeah, I just have to cut off like the last inch and a half of the boards.
Well, that's cool. Because the idea being that that project isn't going to have a home once quarantine is over in California. Right. And so it might as well just be another project in its second life.
Right. It's meant to be temporary.
That's cool. And then that'll be a fun project too for a video for you in the future as well, I think.
For a what? Sorry, you cut out right at the end.
I was going to say, I think that could be a fun project video for you in the future too, taking that project
apart, and then
being like, okay, I've got 4 pieces this size, 2 pieces that size, and I've got to repurpose them for something new with as like little waste as possible. That could be fun.
But I'll follow up on it, hopefully sooner than later.
I think that's good though, because it totally recognizes the temporary solution aspect of what you're trying to accomplish. Very cool.
All right. So I guess that's probably enough on that. I'm sure we'll talk about that a lot more in the coming weeks. Again, all of the details are going to be released on the 24th. That's when everything's going to kick off.
Official launch coming soon.
There'll be plenty of time. There'll be prizes again. Rockler's hosting it again. So thank you very much, Rockler, for helping us out with this. I know last week we started going over some questions and I think we only did like one. So maybe we can hit a few more of those.
Yeah, so our goal is going to be slightly more rapid-fire responses than we did last week.
Just
we
yes and no.
Only yes and no, No expanding on your answers any further. Do you like apple dumplings?
Yes.
No.
I think.
All right.
No.
Hey, I don't need to hear any more, Chris. That's it. Just yes. Okay. All right, so our first question is, and maybe if you have a good story, cool. If not, everyone has a skip or a veto right. Yeah. You don't have to answer if you don't want. But if you got a good story for this one, I thought it was a good question. It is most memorable commissions, good or bad.
Ooh.
Does anybody have anything that they built?
Well,
maybe one of your classics from a while ago.
I mean, I think when people say commission, they mean more like they're paying for the actual physical item. But technically, right. a lot of the stuff we do content-wise is commissioned. Someone's commissioning that piece for content. So if it's the latter, it would be the shipping container house, which technically was a commission to do a video series for Home Depot. But let's take it more literal. I would say, you know, the projects we did with building out Schultz's studio was a lot of fun. And also just seeing how that's now become the backdrop for these rants that he does that are getting just ridiculous amounts of views. And
yeah, that is cool to see.
Kind of dominating the internet. The other one that comes to mind was the first Great Store that I did. That was a lot of fun. Tight window. It was the challenge of, you know, normally what we do, we don't really have to think about material costs outside of how the audience is going to perceive it. But with these bigger kind of commissions, that actually gets factored in because that affects your profit margins and things like that. So I enjoyed the kind of strategery of doing the Great Stores because I kind of had to factor that all in. You know, the labor I was paying out, the materials I was getting relative to what I was charging. And that just added like a kind of a little bit more gamesmanship to the whole project that made it a little more complicated.
That's pretty cool because you really took on kind of a contractor role in that sense, that you're subcontracting out a lot of other kind of skilled labor jobs.
I would say for me, I mean, obviously there's a lot are memorable for different reasons, but just to go with recency bias, the desk that I just did that was for the set of plans.
And oh, yeah.
Kind of because it really marked like a change in the way that I think about the business, whereas like, you know, when I started doing this, the main income stream that I was going for was the money that I got for selling a piece. Then it evolved into this thing where like I could sell a piece and I'd get a little bit from YouTube and that would be the cherry on top. Then it evolved into this thing where the sponsorship was the way that I got the money. And then the YouTube money was a little cherry on top and that I could potentially maybe sell the piece was a little cherry on top. And now it's like evolved into this place where the main thing that I want to get out of this is that set of plans that I can have forever. So that's like the centerpiece. And then the fact that I can sell it and the fact that it's going to be on YouTube and all of those other things are the cherries on top. So it's like this, it marks this evolution of like what I've been working to and where I want to be, at least for the next while.
And your Sunday's just turning into all cherries on top.
I know.
Hey man, dude, I love the maraschinos.
Mad respect though, because that's the most impressive part is you're getting all of these new revenue streams, new kind of potential opportunities that you're making for yourself, but it's not at the cost of the one previous. Like everything you're talking about is you're stacking it on top of what you're already doing. And I think that's the coolest part.
Right. And I'm like, this desk should be a lot more than what I sold it for. But it was one of those things where like, I really want to do a desk plan. I don't need another desk personally. It was perfect timing that this guy contacted me and I said like, hey, I'll give you a big discount, but I get like full creative control over it. And yeah. He was cool with it. He was very happy with the way that it came out. He got a great discount on a piece. So like it just everything lined up perfect. And so that's a great situation.
I would love to hear how many times people say, actually, no, I don't want you to just do whatever you want. Because that's every time you do a commission nowadays, it's like, yeah, I told them I have to design it however I want. And they said, absolutely.
Those are all the ones that say yes. Yeah. If they don't say yes, it's true. Probably not going to work out.
There you go.
So, Mike, what commissions are memorable for you? You haven't done that many custom commissions other than like the store, right?
Yeah. So it's funny. I took a long, long break from like what commissions normally are from starting my channel to a year ago. The first probably 50 videos I made, half of those I was building for somebody else because I think that was the time where, I mean, I've described it on this show many times, but that was right whenever I dropped out of school to pursue YouTube. And I had money saved, but that money was saved for, well, lasting as long as humanly possible so I could try this YouTube thing for as long as I could. And so to combat the cost of materials, I was just building anybody who was down to have me build anything for them with the same stipulation that you're talking about, Chris, of like, tell me what to make, but then it's going to look the way I want it to. And all I want is for you to pay for materials. And then over time, I started having people pay me some money on top and then some money on top. And then I got to a point where YouTube started making enough money and I was landing sponsors to where commissions no longer became an important part of my business. Mm-hmm. But the idea of like whatever these kind of bootleg left turn commissions we're talking about are, that was really how I was able to build Modern Builds, because I was trying to do it nickel and diming everywhere I can. And there were two commissions back to back. They were episode 10 and episode 11 of Modern Builds from October of 2015. And they are a mid-century coffee table and a mid-century console table. Both of them are super DIY. They both have good little gimmicks. They were just good for the time. They were a couple of the first projects that I built that I was happy with how they looked and functioned. They served their purpose really well. They were a couple of the first projects that really tuned me into the idea that I need to be doing mid-century themed projects. And at the end of the day, the guy that I built them from was really happy, and he's a friend of mine. So win, win, win.
They were instrumental in helping you develop that classic Modern Build style.
That's exactly what it was. It basically showed, you know, putting mid-century in the titles and having good, clean lines for a thumbnail is what was missing in a lot of these categories on YouTube. So that was sort of the project that gave me the insight to really double down. I had done one console table that was mid-century themed before that. But other than that, that was really my first dive into it. And I'm glad I did them, because if Patrick Fuller did not reach out to me about a console and a coffee table, I probably wouldn't have had the reason to build those two projects.
You wouldn't be sitting here.
Everything happens for a reason.
Crazy.
Yeah, everything happens for a reason.
Indeed.
All right, we got another question.
So we effectively did not say yes or no to that one.
Oh, wait, Chris, I do want to just give you props though, man. You really killed it on that desk. That desk is about as
desky as can be.
It's like, it's just so perfect. There's like literally nothing to change about it. You know what I'm trying to say?
I appreciate that.
It didn't shatter my world.
It's not
because
super
you've
pro,
made it.
It's super executive.
That's what it was. I've seen Chris make desks that are somewhat similar, right? You've done things in that vein before, but mm-hmm. the execution on this one was just 100% spot on. There's like nothing to change at all.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. I love those the details in the drawer pull handles. Really cool.
Boom.
But next question. This one's going to be a quicker one.
Okay.
After how long did you make the jump into YouTube full time? How long were you making videos before you decided, screw it, we're going for it?
I mean, so for me, it's hard to say, because if you determine full time as investing 40 hours a week into something, I would say by the time I did my second video, pretty much. If you consider it like quitting your 9-to-5 job to only do that, then it took me like, God, what was it? 3.5 years?
Yeah. Full time and all your time are two different things. Right. I think I've always done it. Since I've been doing it, I've always done it at least 40 hours a week. Mm-hmm. I think that's the thing too. It's funny when I talk to people and they're sort of saying, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. The way I don't try to judge anyone, and I just try to be encouraging and supportive. But internally, when I'm thinking like, oh, this person's going to make it work or they're not, it's when they ask me these questions and I sort of tell them how much I worked and how few days I took off, which was zero.
Right.
And I see them try to sort of kind of, well, couldn't I do this, and start to look for the ways to avoid that level of commitment. That's when I kind of think like, well, good luck, because that might work. And some people can do it, but very few that I know can. So if it's full time, as in a 40-hour work week, it's always been full time. It's just been on top of another full time job.
Right.
And, you know, other things have to get sacrificed to make that all work. And, you know, that includes sleep, social time, video games, or whatever else you like to indulge in. And so I wasn't working to do it full time. I was working to stop working two full time jobs.
Yeah, that's
right.
Very accurate for my situation as well.
Yeah. And there,
very cool.
And you may be clever enough to figure out a way around that, but you shouldn't assume that you are. So the way I always look at it is, we talked about this before, embrace the suck, go for it, be prepared for it to be horrible, and then be pleasantly surprised if it's less so.
Yeah, that's also say, like, because like even going into my first video that I put up, so just the amount of time that I poured into that, like I was basically
spending 40 hours a week by the time I started that first build and editing and all that. And like, I really poured myself into that first build to see if I liked it. So like, there's no, you know, yeah, you can lose a little bit of time. That's the downside, is like, pour yourself into a first build and like, give it everything you got and see if you like it. And if you do like it, like, it's not hard to put full time into it, because like, you will be motivated to do it.
And at least you'll know if you don't like it, that you really do. But yeah, yeah. If you dip your toes in with like, I guess what you're calling like an easy win, then maybe you're not giving yourself the full experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Very cool. Yeah. And for me, it was, I was all in from day one. I had been flirting with YouTube for some things prior to starting with Modern Builds, and that was the goal. And we made it happen, Captain.
You know what? Actually, right. So maybe that's a common theme between all three of us, is we all kind of went full time in on it in terms of like our investment into it right from the beginning. But I don't think any of us had expectations of it being a full-time job in what it would give back to us right off the bat.
I did.
Well, except for Ben and Mike.
Well, I mean, that was just the goal. I mean, I was dropping out of school to do YouTube professionally, but yeah, I mean, I didn't think it was going to work out as easily as quickly.
Like, I wasn't 100% confident, but my intention was to make it work.
And, there you
and,
go.
And yeah. I believed that I could. I wasn't 100% confident it would work out as well as it did, but I was willing to try and risk as if it was a certainty.
So I would say I had those exact same aspirations, but maybe less confidence that it would.
I would say,
well, Chris, you're just way too modest.
Up all of our personalities.
All right. I've got our next question here. And I think this one's actually pretty cool. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I miss something?
No, it was just saying that, like, our... Like, we all worked equally hard. We were all hopefully optimistic.
Our Some of us less optimistic.
We're just like relative to our personalities.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's pretty
like
much
Mike
it.
Was like,
there you
oh,
go.
Oh, yeah, this will be great. No big deal. I'm like, yeah, I think this works. They really kind of thought about it for a while. Chris was like, I'm not sure this is going to work, but I'm going to try anyways.
Nobody's ever going to watch this. People are going to hate me.
That's hilarious. Chris is like, I'm not going to become the most popular woodworker on the internet. No, that's not me. That's crazy.
Yeah.
All right, Chris.
Yo.
Ben, here we go. Our next question is, I know you guys grew up in different places and in different times. What did wood/shop classes look like while you were in school?
Oh, man.
Is that something that was offered for you guys?
For me, it started, we got a bandsaw. Me and my brother did for Christmas. Just a bandsaw. And then the following Christmas, I think I was like 9 or 10 when we got it. And then the following Christmas, we got a belt sander. Super crappy Craftsman, like from Sears, like probably like a $90 bandsaw. The blade would always fall off. The belt sander worked great. And yeah, I taught myself to make bandsaw boxes and kind of figure that out by sort of gluing up different chunks of scrap wood that we'd salvaged from behind a cabinet store. And I started figuring out how to like really make patterns by sort of layering like mahogany with teak, with maple, to create these sort of pattern blocks. And everything was really small. These were all like boxes that were like smaller than like 3 inches by like 4 inches. So that was sort of the start. And yeah, I think I did it pretty often. I was always making like wooden swords or boxes or dinosaurs or all sorts of stuff pretty much from like 9 till like 13 or 14. And then I became interested in sports and kind of stopped making stuff up until college.
Nice. What about you, Chris?
For me, so in high school, there was no wood class. The only exposure that I ever had was in 7th grade. It was one of the electives. So we would have different electives for like a trimester. So I had wood shop for one trimester. So it was probably, you know, like, I don't know, 12 weeks or something like that. And I could not have cared less about it. Like, I had zero interest in it. I just, you know, went through it and did it. I think I've actually told the story on there. I was actually, one of the projects that we had to build was a like toolbox, like a little tool carrier type thing, tool caddy, I guess.
Yeah.
And mine was like coming out really bad, and I actually went in the back and broke it and pretend that that was vandalized.
So, I don't know what happened to it. I just showed up and I was like this.
Hey, I got to get my B+.
Well, it's funny. The class I got the lowest grade for in my entire time at college was the wood shop class.
Dang, this sounds like that classic Michael Jordan saying, like, Michael Jordan failed his high school basketball team or something like that.
I was cut from the woodshop team in seventh grade.
This guy was a total hard ass, and it was all about technique, and he believed that there was one way to do everything. And of course, that resisted me. So we butted heads a lot. I did learn a lot from him. But yeah, I was just like, no, I'm going to design it this way. And I used like maple and purple heart to make like a blanket chest that was like really high contrast, but like real clean and minimal looking, like perfectly squared. And he's like, no, you got need more detail on it. I'm like, no, your details look stupid. And so he gave me a bad grade on design simply because he didn't like it subjectively.
You know, I'm sure a lot of that kind of is why I didn't really care about it, because like I didn't see it as a creative thing when I took it. It was, here's the tool caddy thing that you guys are going to build. Here's how you do it. Do it. So there right. was nothing creative to me about it. And I just like was whatever. I phoned it in.
Yeah. It's like the difference between playing a sport and just doing exercise.
Yeah.
Like,
man. So I had a totally different experience. I went to wood shop in middle school. We didn't have it in high school, which seemed like one of those things that were always weird to me. It's like, yeah, we're going to show kids and get them interested in middle school, but also then give them no outlet once they get to high school if that's what they want to do. But beside the point, I loved that class. I thought it was so fun for two reasons, because it was a blow-off class to a degree, because if you were just going to go out in the shop and not do anything that day, there was one teacher to watch 15 kids in a wood shop, so it was easy to kind of like blow off a class here and there and not get in trouble for it.
Right.
But we had a really well set up shop. I remember thinking at the time, like, this is more tools than I ever thought. Like, it was really cool. We had, I think it was all Powermatic. There was some Grizzly stuff, but the majority of the equipment was Powermatic. And I remember there being between 2 and 4 big cabinet saws. There were 3 like full size lathes, 2 full-size band saws. Like, it was a really well set up shop, and it was decently funded because I always did good fundraisers. And I remember I made so many projects the 2 years that I took it. I had it a semester per year both years. I made all those entry projects that you have to make when you start. That's like a clock, a stupid thing, like a bowl here or there. But I remember making like a chess board. I made a gun cabinet that was just obnoxiously large. I made a big collections of bowls. I made a few cutting boards. I really went ham in that class. I remember thinking, like, this is just the most fun because everything was just always set up really nicely and ready to go. Because I had grown up around tools, but in a like messy garage environment, never in a clean workshop environment. But it was kind of what you guys were talking about. I got exposed to it in middle school, and then I was in high school. I was caring more about sports and things at that time. So I never really built anything until kind of college came around and I started building stuff again for music equipment. And yeah, I really feel like if there was some outlet for it, whether it was woodshop or even some Votech opportunities around it, I probably would have pursued it in high school. And I'm sure a lot of other people would, but it seems like it's not there.
Well, I think the point is that
early exposure.
Right. And you just create a familiarity with it, and then providing access to it along the way, I think, is important. Yeah. But it's so interesting how you can not do something for 5 or 6 years, but because you did it for a while when you were younger, it's like, oh, it seems so accessible to get back into it.
Right. It's kind of always stayed in your head as something you can do.
Right.
Or
and
something
that's
like
the
that.
Same idea around like these like franchise IPs and entertainment too, right? Like, the reason why the comic book movies are good is because there's some familiarity already. People aren't starting at zero. So it's not about trying to figure out this perfect class or this new like educational program that's like super progressive. It's just expose people to a lot of things early, and some of them will stick and some of them won't. They'll get too cool for school at some points, but you'll be surprised at what people come back around to.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what's even cooler is some of my little cousins around holiday times, I'll catch up with them and see what they're up to. And, you know, you have cousins that all of a sudden they were like 4 years old and now they're like 12.
Yeah.
They kind of jumped like to where they started caring about things that weren't like toddler type stuff. I got a couple cousins that have gotten into 3D printing and their dad has gotten them a printer and is showing them how to use it and all of this stuff. And they were telling me and showing me all the stuff that they had made. And a lot of it's like action figures and like custom toys for their toys, like accessories for their toys and all kinds of stuff like that. And I think this is like the new version of like Woodshop or whatever that is.
Yeah.
That early exposure to showing people like if you have an idea, you can use it with your brain and your hands, like in combination somehow. And as long as schools are incorporating, if not Woodshop or Metal Shop, at least some kind of 3D design or digital fabrication, it's a shame. But hopefully schools that have the resources are definitely doing it.
Yeah, the classes that for me were most influential was even at like community college before I went to Cornell. It was I took a 3D art and design class, which was like a combination of sculpture, drawing. And it was basically you had like a different assignment every week and the class met 2 times a week. So it was like this kind of, you know, 12 to 13 projects all in a row, all different mediums. They provided all the stuff. And it was just like, it was really fun. It was like one of the most fun courses also because it like wasn't too hard. Like the teacher was like super supportive. Everyone did well in it. People were kind of all helping each other with the projects. And she was really good at providing enough structure where you kind of knew what you were doing. And she would kind of be like, okay, this week we're doing like drawings, but only black and white. And you can only do straight lines. Right. Mm. So, and it'd be like, how are you going to approach this? And she'd show like examples from different like artists and stuff like that. So it was a lot of fun. It was just enough guidance to make you feel like you didn't have to come up with something yourself, but there was still enough flexibility where you felt like you did come up with something yourself.
That's pretty cool. I remember having an English teacher that did a good job of making prompts and made me like put effort into writing a couple poems and some stuff that I just
you
never in my life would have
find
tried.
These poems and read them on air.
Dude, I hope they're destroyed. But it's that idea. Like she came up with some creative prompts that were like, you know what? Just for the like the puzzle or like it's itching the same thing a Sudoku challenge does. You know, like I'm just going to figure this out somehow.
OK, audience, if you want to hear Mike's poetry,
there's no option. It doesn't work
on every one of his new Instagram posts.
No.
Right. Release the poetry and tag me in it and I'll repost it. So that's in all of his comments. Release the poetry.
Man, I was just trying to relate on the power of a good teacher. I learned my lesson. Okay. Guys, don't do that.
Do it.
But for anyone that does,
relentlessly.
All right. So I've got our next question. And this one I think is a pretty easy one. Give us your answer and a short reason why. What projects do you wish beginners would take on more often? And I've got my answer. I wish they would build beds.
That's a good that's for a couple of reasons. I was thinking too.
I know. I thought it was low-hanging fruit, and I'm taking it.
Take
a few
it.
Reasons. You have margin for error. You get the benefit of needing it to fit a mattress, so you don't have to come up with a lot of the dimensions. You let the mattress figure it out for you.
Yep.
And then if there's anything I know about beginners, they are more likely to build something way sturdier and chunkier than it needs to be than too flimsy for it to fail. And if a bed needs to be anything, or if there's anywhere sturdiness is appreciated most, it's in a bed. So that is why beginners should be building beds. All right.
I think you nailed that answer. I'll expand upon it a little bit, just conceptually, and be like, I would suggest bigger projects rather than smaller projects.
Damn it, you guys.
Bigger projects is just like you can see the joinery more. I actually just think bigger things are a lot easier to work with. They're not as intricate.
Yeah, your fingers are kind of away from the blade more.
Well, here's the reason is that your mistakes don't scale.
Right.
So if you were going to leave an eighth of an inch gap in something, you're going to leave that same. It's not like, oh, because I'm building something that's 8 feet long, now my gap is 2 inches. It's still going to be an eighth inch gap, and it's just going to be a lot less noticeable in that big thing than that small thing. So that's kind of where I was going to. So I guess just to give a different answer, I will say, and this is going to be a very macro answer too, is build something that like really excites you straight out of the gate instead of like just this thing that's like, well, this is a beginner, a cutting board that doesn't really excite me, but I'm supposed to. It's like a rite of passage or whatever.
Don't do a rocking chair.
Well, that'll be very hard.
Unless you love sitting in a rocking chair.
Get your gears grinding. But,
you've been sitting in a rocket chair your whole life thinking, man, I should build one of these one day.
Yeah. But I was just going to say, I think that it'll keep you motivated to like push harder and more excited about it.
Yeah.
I think you're right. And if you can connect a hobby you already have onto woodworking, build something for that hobby. Build like a mountain biking rack or something like that.
Yeah. All right.
Cool. Okay. Here's one. Another a rapid fire question for you.
All right, one more.
Okay.
Are you really thinking or did you cut out?
No, this is for dramatic effect.
Okay, thank you. Keep it. Pause 5 more seconds.
Okay. Okay, here we go then. I would love to hear your response around self-criticism, comparing your work with others, knowing you're newer, and I would assume, you know, it cuts off, but I would just say, assuming that you're newer and you still have room to learn, you know, like how do you appreciate what you build without beating yourself up over it in the meantime?
Hmm.
Or did you guys experience that?
I mean, I think that I'm so focused less on like the craftsmanship and the quality that like I just want it to be good enough. And I'm really more about the idea. So I think because that's always been my mindset, like I've been a little bit easier. And I just kind of assume that I'm not that great of a craftsman or a builder. So like I don't have that pressure on myself where I'm like, man, I'm not good enough. I'm never going to be good enough or whatever. It's more just about like the idea and was I able to execute on what my idea was. And if I can do that, then like I feel good about whatever I built.
Yeah, I look at it the same way when you're driving. If you look at just the car right in front of you and if they put on their brakes and you put on your brakes, you're going to be like herky jerky and driving really short. So for me, I'm not that concerned with any one project. I'm just looking at, you know, some of the projects come out way better than I expected and some of them come out way worse. But in either case, all I'm really looking at is, did I learn something? Did I pay my bills? And did I make progress towards the longer term goals? I don't think I've ever had a project as a goal. The projects are stepping stones in the goals. So I'm just learning either how do I gain this skill, right? So it's like I've been doing a lot of stepping stone projects lately, like where they're kind of experimental steps that are getting me familiar with a new material or topic that'll then let me achieve something bigger that I want to do. And at the same time, I'm making money on those projects as I'm learning and building up these skill sets and leveling up to take on the bigger things. So I'm not that critical of any one project because, yeah, the projects are never the goals. The goals is where I'm going as an individual and how I'm increasing my access to new opportunities.
Nice. I would say my answer to that is it sounded like the question already had half of it answered. Understanding that you are starting and that you're not as good as what you're going to be in a year or what you're going to be in 2 years or what you're going to be in 3 years. I know recently we've been talking quite a bit, me and you, Ben, just because out of habit, we've been just building a lot of things out of circular saw and jigsaws on the fly on site. And over that time period, I got so much more comfortable, and I know you did too, using those tools freehand and just trusting that I can cut a real straight line or I can cut a good curve without too much blade deflection and not having that be a thing that stops me from either doing that process or wanting to take on that project. And I think that that is something that you find out across the board about yourself and your making. And so as long as you're holding on to improvements instead of shortcomings, I think that's the first step. And then the thing that enables you to really do that is just cataloging your mistakes.
Yeah.
If you can catalog your mistake and answer why it happened, then you can prevent it from happening more often. And I think that's the key, is not making the same mistakes over and over again, because those are the things that, in my experience, really annoy me and make me lose motivation. And then having something that you failed on before go well the next time is something that is incredibly rewarding also. Not to just talk about what I'm doing for the sake about talking myself, but this epoxy project did not go well during the pour. And that's because I'm pretty new to epoxy. And it was surprisingly not disheartening, that whole process. Ben, you were there for most of it. It was just a lot of like, well, that didn't go as planned, but we're just going to wing it and see how it goes next time. Because I knew it was my first time doing it, and I knew there was a 0% chance of it going without a hitch.
That's kind of your brand too, Mike.
I'm trying to get people to try new things, right. You know?
Wing it.
But to that effect, I had worked with slabs before. I've flattened slabs. I've used router sleds. I've belt sanded for more hours than most people have. And that part of the project went so smooth. So I stacked mistake on mistake on mistake. But even though that happened, I didn't let it get to me. And then because I had made previous mistakes on wood rather than epoxy, but doing all of these processes to fix the epoxy pour mistakes, I was able to sort of like redeem myself with my prior knowledge and my cataloging of like how to do things the right way. And so as long as you build your book, your encyclopedia of how to do things the right way, so you don't get those same mistakes over and over again, then I think that's going to be the thing that hopefully propels you into really enjoying building stuff.
Yeah.
Good answers. Sweet. Good answers. Good questions.
Yeah, that was a good question. All right. So this final question is going to lead into our obsessions. And
is it one are we
the question
with?
Close. It was, haven't heard y'all talk about this in a while. What's a new album or podcast you're interested in or into?
Let's just do that for our obsessions this week.
That's what I said. Yeah. This leads us into our obsessions. And I have one queued up.
Okay.
And I've got, it's all music.
Okay.
So one is an album from a band called Gleamer, and it is titled Down Through. So G-L-E-E-M-E-R, Gleamer. They're a great band. If you're a fan of Balance and Composure or Movements or Citizen, or if any of these hit a key, check them out. They put out a really good album. Started on track 3 for your best listening experience. And let me know what you think. And then the other one that I would recommend big time, and it's not because of their name, is from a band called Modern Color. I know it sounds very similar to Modern Builds, but it is not.
That's why you like them.
But they've got a new album called From the Leaves of Your Garden. And it is in the same genre, in the same vein. So if you're interested in it, check them out. Check them both out. If you like one, you will probably like the other. But all in all, I will just say there is a new resurgent in the whole indie, rock, emo, whatever scene you call it, kind of alternative and what all that turned into. So cool stuff. What about you guys?
I got one. Hiatus Coyote. You heard of them? Good. They're an Australian, okay. Kind of jazzy, but more modern, just super talented. My buddy, IDK, who's a musician, suggested them to me, and they're fantastic. Hiatus
Sweet.
Coyote.
Very nice. All right.
Dang, they're pulling numbers too. I like it. Chris, what do you have?
So an album I've been listening to a lot recently. I don't know. I think the album's probably a year old, and I'm not sure exactly how to pronounce the band's name, but Waysblood. Have you ever heard of them? W-E-Y-E-S
no.
And then space blood. It's a band, girl singer. The album is called Titanic Rising. It's fairly eclectic, but it's I would just say it's like melodic and nice. It's funny actually too. So like I listened to the album and I was like, oh man, this is a really good album. How have I not heard this before? Like it was pretty solid start to finish. And then I was listening to Pitchfork has a podcast now, and they did an episode last week all about Enya. And then they were comparing Way's Blood to Enya. And I was like, I never thought of her as Enya like at all. But then like some of her stuff actually is kind of Enya-ish inspired. I never even had thought of that. So yeah, Way's Blood. If you have liked anything else that I've recommended, then maybe you'll like this too.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for listening to the Modern Maker podcast. The best thing you can do is spread the word, and there's a few ways we can accomplish that. Number one, you can just let a friend know about the show if they are interested in making, design, or anything in that world. You can also share us on your Instagram, maybe on a story or on a post, or just DM us any topic suggestions or ideas that you have, and maybe we'll give you a shout out and you can share that. But otherwise, we really do appreciate all of the questions that we got this episode. Who knows, we may have more spillover in next week, because this was a lot of fun. I love these prompts. They give us new opportunities to talk about new things. So keep them coming, and we will see you next week on the Modern Maker podcast. Bye, everybody.
Later.
Bye.
Awesome.